there. Welcome to the Creative Classroom Podcast. I'm your host, John Spencer. I'm a former middle school teacher, current college professor, and I am passionate about seeing teachers transform their classrooms into bastions of creativity and wonder. And one of the things you'll probably hear me talk about a lot on this podcast is design thinking. It was a theme in the book Launch that I co-wrote with AJ Giuliani. And it's an idea that I want to bring up in terms of teachers and our own practice. So I'm not thinking necessarily about design thinking projects with students, which is often the focus that we have on this podcast. What I'm thinking right now is, what does it mean to use design thinking to innovate in your own practice? So I'm going to start with a story. A few months ago, I had the opportunity to deliver an opening keynote and closing talk for EDX, a conference in Eindhoven, which is in the Netherlands, if you're an American and you're as clueless about geography as most Americans, myself included, that's where it is. Anyway, Joachim, I hope I'm saying his name right. I still suck at pronouncing Dutch names, but anyway, Joachim first shared his idea of a week-long design expedition, and I love that term, expedition. But I imagined teachers working in like a makerspace or a fab lab, something like that, designing a product that would mirror the type of work that students will be doing in, say, a STEM class or some kind of, you know, manufacturing class. But instead, the leaders at Fontys ask teachers to use design thinking to innovate in their own practice instead. Teachers began with a problem they wanted to solve or an idea they wanted to pursue. Then they broke into teams and they chose one person's idea as the focus area. Now, I was a little concerned at this point. What would happen when people wanted to innovate within their own context only to find out that they were working on someone else's project? Initially, there was some pushback. Each group formed into tight collaborative teams, and some people felt like their idea wasn't going to be solved. Complete strangers, though, began to trust one another and to share openly as they asked questions, engaged in research, and designed solutions. True, they didn't all get to solve their own problems, and a few of them were initially disappointed. But by the end, there was excitement. They learned a process that was empathy-driven, and that was the key thing. It wasn't that they had solved the one issue they were trying to solve. It's that they came away with a set of tools that they could use to solve any problem, and that was the power of design thinking in action. From there, teams focused on user-centered design process. They worked through the understanding with key stakeholders, and then they eventually ideated, tested, revised their solutions until they had something that they were proud of. There was something powerful about watching the teachers going through this design process and innovating within their own practice. By the time they launched their finished prototypes, they had created the kinds of educational experience that we would want kids to experience. And the cool thing is, again, they left with this set of tools and this framework and this blueprint for innovation. So I want to think about five benefits of using design thinking to transform your practice. Nearly a decade ago, I met up with my friends Chad and Javi. And Javier and I had been teaching for a long time, and we were now at the district office as coaches. And we were planning out a STEM summer camp. We began bouncing ideas back and forth and started making decisions for what we thought was best when suddenly Javi said, "Our goal is to amplify student voice, but we are making all these big decisions without considering the perspective of our students." So we created surveys, interviewed students, and brought them into the process. Javi and I had used a similar process when we planned our service learning program and documentaries and mural projects that we'd always done with our students before being tech coaches. In other words, we not only asked students to use design thinking, but we also used a design thinking approach as we designed our own programs. Often we would begin with a problem and consider how the creative constraint might actually lead to innovation. We would focus on empathy as we engaged in research and ideation and building and implementing. And we would tweak the projects through tons of little iterations. To me, that's the real power of design thinking, the way it can lead to innovation when the system seems broken or when it seems like you don't have enough permission. Now, over the last 3 years, I've had an opportunity to work with teachers all around the world on design thinking. I've done workshops and keynotes and things like that, and I've seen similar stories from teachers and administrators and coaches that are using design thinking to transform their classrooms. I always leave these conversations inspired by the pockets of this empathy-driven innovation. And while I don't see design thinking as the solution or some kind of magic bullet, I do think it's a powerful framework for creativity and innovation. So I want to explore the benefits of using design thinking for innovation. Number one, design thinking is a chance to build empathy. The term build empathy might be a little misleading here. Teachers are, on the whole, incredibly empathetic, so maybe they're not building the empathy so much as tapping into the empathy. But there are moments where I have found on my own that I get in this sort of program mindset where I start thinking about ideal systems or structures or what would work best for me, and I forget that I am dealing with actual people. Just recently, I ran into this problem with my cohort. Although I'd used design thinking for planning the course, and I'd used UX design for designing these systems and structures, I started planning specific lessons without even bothering to ask, what will this experience be like for my students? Along the way, I forgot about the thoughts, emotions, and fears of pre-service teachers learning how to deconstruct standards for the first time. And as a result, we had an evening when the lesson just bombed. It was awful. But with design thinking, you're actively seeking out user feedback through the entire thing. Case in point, in the launch cycle, this occurs during look, listen, and learn phase, where you're exploring the problem, paying attention to the context, interviewing people, and really gaining an understanding and awareness. It also happens when you're understanding the process or problem, which is the you part of the launch cycle, where you might do needs assessments or surveys in your research. But it's also part of the process when it comes to revising your prototype as you highlight and fix. And in some cases, you might even invite the people that you're working with, the people that you're serving, the students in this case, to be a part of the ideation process. The goal, though, is that you're always asking, what is this like for the people I'm working with? You're always seeking to build empathy. All right, number two, teachers gain contextual knowledge of the design thinking process. Now, when teachers use design thinking in their own practice, they gain this sort of contextual, experiential knowledge about how things work. They can then determine new contexts and design things for their students. I like to think of it this way. We often talk about how teachers should be readers if they're going to teach reading. There's something about being a reader that helps you think like a reader, and that's important for your students. Same thing with thinking like a mathematician or thinking like a writer. I think the idea here is that you learn how to think like a design thinker, and that influences the way you create learning experiences for your students. But it's not just the thinking and the mindset. It's also this sort of emotional understanding of what goes into design thinking. When I was part of the design thinking expedition in the Netherlands, we hit a moment when just about every group looked angry. They were attempting to clarify what they wanted to create, and they just couldn't get there. I remember wondering if we'd made a mistake by allowing them to wade into these murky waters of frustration in the second day. Would they quit? Would they give up in frustration? Would it ruin their sort of expedition experience? Maybe we were doing something wrong in the process. Maybe we hadn't given enough scaffolding. And yet, these were the same emotions, these moments of frustration that I often saw my middle school students experience as well. These were the same types of emotions that my college students now experience when I ask them to walk through design thinking. And it's important to remember this because creativity isn't always fun. Sometimes it's frustrating or boring, and sometimes it gets so difficult that you just want to give up. We tend to view creative work with images of kids skipping in the grass surrounded by rainbows, but real design is gritty, it's frustrating, it's nerve-wracking, but it's totally worth it in the end. In that moment when the group moves past the frustration and you hit a creative breakthrough and design something you never thought you'd be able to design, that is the beauty of walking through it and experiencing those emotions. All right, number three is that design thinking can increase divergent thinking in school culture. Now, it's easy to find problems with the school system. They are all over the place. Spend an hour in a staff lounge and you'll hear about the lack of resources, which is a legitimate complaint, or the pressures of the test, which I think are an even bigger concern, or just things not working properly. Look, we have all dealt with the copy machine, and we have all wanted to take it out just like the movie The Office and just hit it with baseball bats. But the reality is sometimes we can think differently about our challenges. Look, I get it. I don't want to gloss over it. Teachers are overworked and underpaid, and the system can be outdated. It can be slow to innovate. And let's be real, at this time of year, if you're a teacher, you're probably exhausted. But when teachers use design thinking, they begin to approach problems as design challenges. In some cases, the limitations can work as opportunities. Here, the creative constraint pushes you to think divergently and innovate. So all those problems you hate are essentially your design features. They're the opportunities to solve problems. They become the parameters that you will work within, and they become the hidden opportunities that you're going to explore. All right, so that's a lot of abstract thought. Let's really take it home. What does this look like? Well, students are on their smartphones all the time. We get it. True, but there are ways you can tap into the creative and connective power of these phones, right? Homework isn't always working at your school, but your school requires you to assign homework. So is there a way you can change it? Can you make it more authentic? Can you make it optional? Can you make it student-centered? Can you make it collaborative? And in the process, you work with that problem, and it becomes the cornerstone of your design. You have limited time and a rigid curriculum app. That's tough. It really is. But is it possible to work within the curriculum map and do a PBL unit? Does the map explicitly prohibit the teaching of additional standards, or can you make connection to all the standards? Are there time wasters you could scrap to free up the schedule? And what type of PBL units would fit in with those standards? In other words, can you take the tight curriculum map and build an epic project from it? Now, a little nuance here. There are very real challenges that teachers experience, and we need to rail against injustice when we see it. There are some things you can't innovate your way out of. And if there's systemic racism, if there's intolerance, if there's things like that, we ought to speak up, and we ought to speak up loudly. I fully support teachers sticking up for their rights or demanding better resources. I get it. But here's the thing, sometimes the hammer can be used to tear down injustice, but sometimes it can also be used to chisel something amazing. There's a time and a place for both. And often the challenges we see that get in the way of innovation are not massive injustices, they're just small restrictions that require a different way of thinking. And if we're bold enough to take creative risks, we end up innovating. Number four, Design thinking empowers teachers for grassroots innovation. I'm not a fan of the question, how do I get my staff to buy in? For the same reason I don't like the term instructional leader or lead learner, I just don't like when leaders assume that they are the ones who control the instruction for the entire district or the entire school. And there's this assumption to those phrases that change should begin with the formal leadership positions who articulate a vision with a staff and lead them directly into innovation. This top-down hierarchical approach often leads to resentment. Hence the question, how do I get the buy-in? And teachers get jaded, and with any kind of administrative turnover, they start to ask the question, is this just another program? Now, a little nuance here again. I've never been a principal or a district level administrator, and I know that leadership matters, but the best leaders I have worked for have been the ones who were able to facilitate innovation by focusing on the systems and the culture that will support teachers being innovative. And this is one of the reasons I love design thinking. It's a powerful way to facilitate this type of grassroots collaboration. It's less about teacher buy-in and more about teacher empowerment. Within design thinking, teachers work interdependently to design projects and programs and systems and structures. And here the teachers depend on each other to share their ideas, to engage in research, to build consensus, and to navigate ideas together. And as they move through creation and through different iterations, they depend on each other to give feedback and to revise their shared work. This is admittedly tricky. Genuine collaboration takes time and it requires trust. And this is where the leadership plays a key role in freeing up the time and giving the permission to innovate. It's also the critical role of the leader to help set the culture for the staff that can lead to this type of collaboration. All right, guys, number five, final one, is that design thinking can help schools model iterative thinking. One of the most common questions I hear when conducting design thinking or project-based learning workshops is, what if this doesn't work? Or another question would be just, what if it fails? And to be honest, this has been a question I battle with as well in my practice. I tend to be a perfectionist. I want to guarantee ahead of time that a new approach will work and that I know it will work. However, that's not how innovation works. True innovation requires creative risk-taking. You sometimes know that it might work, but you also know it might not. And each time, you're essentially doing an experiment. From there, you tweak it, you refine it, or you just abandon it, and you treat it as a failed experiment. And this is at the heart of iterative thinking. It's the notion that we are constantly working to refine our craft, that we're being nimble and flexible, that we know how to pivot when we need to pivot. And it's a recognition that there is no such thing as perfection, and that's okay. With design thinking, we make this distinction between failure and failing. Failure is permanent, while failing is temporary. And this is why we included the highlight and fix phase in the launch cycle. This stage pushes us to admit that every project and program and product has elements that are working well, but also elements that, quite honestly, need improvement. And again, that's okay. It's easy to do creative work when you know ahead of time that it will succeed. But the best creative work is the kind that will leave you feeling a little bit uncertain, and maybe at times even a little bit scared. And when you choose to embrace design thinking and to take those creative risks, it has a profound effect on how you teach. It helps you develop a growth mindset as an educator, but it also helps you model this creative risk-taking for your students so that they become the creative risk-takers and innovators that you know that they can be. All right, thank you for listening to the Creative Classroom Podcast. If you enjoy this podcast at all, would you do me a favor and leave a review on iTunes, or I guess it's now Apple Podcasts, and Stitcher? Thank you for listening. I really appreciate it. Have a fantastic day and go out and make something awesome.